You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. I'd like to hug you, Doctor, if I really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the war, and I'd like to give the information, asking for love, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can really hear you in the thick of my fear. Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges, the Common Sense Show. Thanks for staying with us through the break. You know me as the host, and we're the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And I asked Bob Kudla to come on with me tonight. He's an economic expert, and he's really an expert in investments, but he understands the forces that drive investments, which makes him an investment on economic current events. And I've asked Bob to come on to help us sort through a bunch of issues. And in the years that I've been doing this, I have never seen such volatility, such animosity in anything. It doesn't matter if it's politics or social media or if it's the stock market. There's extreme volatility in our society. And people say, oh, we're going to have a civil war tomorrow. No, we're not. But could we be going down that path? Could be, but we're a ways off from that. But I think knowing what's going on with these trends will help prepare you to deal with things should they worsen or even stay the same. And for that, I asked Bob Kudla to come on. He's from Trade Genius Academy, and a lot of you are already familiar with his good work. We'll talk more about that a little later in the hour. Bob, welcome to the show. I'm really glad you could join us here on this Sunday evening.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for having me, and you're absolutely right, and this kind of volatility happens when there's going to be a break in the status quo, and we move on to the next new thing, if you will. You know, some people call it the fourth turning, but I just call it they just basically have run out of other people's money, and so there's really no easy answers anymore, and that's what has everybody up in arms, because now hard choices have to be made, and people that have been enjoying the fruits of the old system are now getting pinched, and they don't like it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now you're exactly right. I mean, they've already engaged in highway robbery once with regard to the bailouts, and I like what Iceland did there. Let me ask you, get your opinion on this. Iceland didn't bail out the bankers; they put them in prison. And a few years after that event, their GDP growth was better than ours. Did Iceland do the right thing, or are we going to make that same mistake again, or bailouts coming? What do you think?
Well, I think Iceland absolutely did the right thing. That's the only thing you can do. You have to clear the debt, and you have to take some short-term pain. And before I answer your other question, you know, we did it once again. Did you hear about the Great Depression of 1921, Dave?
Of 1921 or 1929?
Yeah. No, 1921. Have you heard of that one?
No, you've got to enlighten me on that. Is that the post-war recession one? But that's a little long after the war.
Exactly. So 1920, after the war, there was a slump. Typically happens after every kind of conflict. There was a slump. And they begged and begged and begged to have bailouts. And the president at the time did not do it. So we had a one-year really, really steep recession, and we went into a 10-year economic prosperity, almost as similar to what Iceland did. In 1929, the forces that got burned in that move, i.e. the bankers, weren't going to let that happen to them a second time. And we ended up with the Great Depression that went for, 11 years before we got into World War II. So, but to answer your question, no, the central banks are they know exactly. There's simply no way the American people are going to allow another bailout to the extent or scale or the audacity of what we had in 2008. And in fact, I was reading today that the banks have taken. You know, people say, have the banks learned anything from this? Well, in one sense, they have. they've been rapidly pushing all as much liability off of their books as possible and onto the investors' books. And so, you know, when this next one comes, it's going to be nasty from a different perspective, but nobody's going to save the banks this time. I think people would be, there'll be blood in the streets.
I'm chuckling, Bob, because I don't enjoy seeing other people be miserable. I root for people to be successful. I champion the underdog. But in this case, I can't champion criminals. And that's what these people have been, and it's kind of like they're going to get their just comeuppance.
Yeah, I mean, let's call a spade here. They've been operating under counterfeiting for the past 100 years, and anybody can look smart and get rich by doing that, but you get to a point where it starts forcing the issue, and we're seeing the first cracks of it. Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies didn't happen in a vacuum, Dave, and oil prices now have gone up, over almost 50% or where they were over 14 months ago. That doesn't happen by accident. And as of last week, now gold and silver and the miners have started to break out. That doesn't happen by accident. And then you've noticed also too, there's a guy out there called Exeter, and he has this incredible pyramid. It's an inverted pyramid, and we'll talk about that sort of monologue this whole conversation. But in essence, is that as you start rolling down the path of not trusting the counterparty, you end up with the strong dollar then gold. And right now we're in a position where people, remember a year ago, people were always saying that the dollar is going to collapse. And you and I have always been talking, say, it's not. It's the every other currency in the world is going to collapse. In this last 9 months, the dollar has strengthened against everything. And look at the yuan and the euro and the yen and the everything pretty much except for the Swiss bank. And that's the reason for that is because all those currencies now are people are starting to move their money and assets away because they don't trust their ability to be able to pay the debts. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we are now. And the thing that I always look for is when gold and in a sense cryptocurrencies, when they don't start going down against the strengthening dollar, and that's what started happening with gold. In May or June, we had this last of the blip on gold and silver, and now the miners have taken off, and some of the miners that we follow, Dave, are up 50% since January, and they're foretelling that we're going to have another boom in the precious metals because of the lack of trust in the fiat currency.
Well, people should not trust the fiat currency because it's been used to crash economies intentionally before for political gain and economic gain. And I'm not so sure that we're not looking at this. We don't need to go down this conspiratorial trail, but we should not trust the people in charge. I mean, let's just go back to the root just for a second here. The Constitution, it says Congress shall have the power to coin money. Where does it say you give control over your economy, not just your banking system, but your economy, to a group of private bankers that can set interest rates arbitrarily, and they don't even let the president fully choose who the head of their group is? They give them a list of five people to choose from, and they refuse to be audited like they did with Ron Paul. I mean, where does this come in the Constitution? How legal is this whole system that we're under?
Yeah, well, it's not legal, but, when you've seen this whole thing with Trump and the Russia thing, is that when enough people in both parties protect the system, it doesn't go away unless the whole thing melts down, like what's happening like in Venezuela and what's going to happen in Turkey. We can get into that in a minute. It always breaks down, though, because of You print the currency until people can't feed themselves. And so, as a side to that, the other thing I've been reading is, and I knew this anyway, but it always astounds me when I read it, is that I think we could put our tinfoil hats on. I think there is absolutely, the progressive movement has always been about very few small, smart, technocratic, obviously incredibly egotistical people that that feel that the rest of humanity is too stupid to govern their own affairs, and they've discovered that they can use the central banks to basically start controlling things. And you look no further than Japan. You know, Japan owns all their own bonds, the central bank. They own 40% of all the ETF market capitalization. And in fact, worldwide, central banks own 40% of all the assets. Well, here you go. How many people, you know, when people ask me who owns the central banks, it's all the entities that own the preferred shares of those banks. So you're probably talking maybe 100 or 200 families that own those preferred shares. And those are the people that are running the world. And right now, they are the proud owners of 40% of the world's GDP and assets. And that is just astounding. They basically own it. It's not even communism, Dave. It's just an outright theft, and we're back into serfdom. You know, people say, are we going to go to socialism or communism? Like, absolutely not. We're going back to the Middle Ages, and where we're going to be serfs under people who own all the assets. You know, and you look no further than what you and I have been talking about. We talk about this a lot, is that look at social media. Now you have three people are going to decide what is considered news. Three. Of a 350 million population, there's three people. Zuckerberg, Brin, and whoever that crazy guy is that owns Twitter. And they're going to decide what we should know or not know. We should know it.
We were talking about the YouTube plan here, and not my radio show. I consider this to represent the factual opinions of our expert guests. But when I write columns on thecommonsenseshow.com, I have a lot of facts, but it's opinion based on facts. I come to conclusions, and sometimes I suggest alternatives to the direction that we're going. And what YouTube is now doing is they're going to what they call authoritative news, and they're going to tell me if someone else agrees with my opinion enough that anybody else should even be allowed to see it. And they're using Wikipedia and Encyclopedia Britannica. Encyclopedia Britannica, it's not current events, it's history, and it's outdated history at that. Because by the time you get the books on your shelf, it's 3 to 4 years outdated. And then Wikipedia, excuse me, no university in the country allows Wikipedia to be used in students' references, citations for documented work. But YouTube is. What does it say about their professionalism?
Oh, that's irrelevant, Dave. I know that was a loaded question to me. That's irrelevant. It's all about really controlling the narrative. You know,
yeah, that's it. Exactly.
And what really cracks me up is, you know, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, those guys came from Russia. And under the Soviet Union, and they were Jewish boys, and so they had two strikes against them. They were under communism and they were being persecuted. And what do? They come to America, and what are they gonna do? Now control what people think? They become the devil, they hate it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, which is just amazing to me, and that they think this is okay. And I know there's people have this deep-seated need to try to control everything. And you know, and it's funny, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I'm a Christian, a practicing Christian. My faith is in Jesus Christ, and I know I can't control anything. And at some point in my life, I'm going to know my end is near. And I think people really fear those things. And there's many people now, as we get more and more secular and non-believing, I think a lot of the people, especially on the alt-left, they want to create heaven on earth. And they want to control everything that can cause pain. And you know, and ironically, it actually has the reverse effect. You know, they tend to cause more pain, and you know, the Nassim Taleb, he calls when you try to smooth things out too much, you create eruptions because you can't control it, and that's what we're seeing in this world today. I think there's a deep seated need to try to control everything, and they and it just like putting fingers in a dike, Dave. and it's just going to explode all over the place.
Yeah, I know. I look at it like they're trying to bail out the Titanic with a teaspoon. I mean, have you noticed that since the time of the Republican primary, that the harder the mainstream media pushed against Trump, the more his popularity actually grew?
Yeah, I did. And I think people, I think they totally misread the population is that, you know, I mean, I like Trump and I voted for him in the election. But a lot of people voted for Trump because it was a vote against the status quo. They wanted to register their disdain for the status quo because they saw no difference between the two. I mean, look no further than our Speaker of the House. I mean, he don't support Trump one iota. And you know, I mean, they could have kiboshed all this stuff with Russia and all this other stuff. You don't hear a word. And you wonder, are they compromised? Or are they truly, truly so ingrained in the status quo that they just cannot support the changes that this country needs to go through?
I think you're being too generous in your assessment of the underlying reasons that compromise members of Congress. Let me just give you two examples of many examples I could go to. Mad Maxine Waters. She has a public servant salary of just over $170,000 a year, yet she lives in the wealthiest, biggest house in her district, valued at $5 million. How do you do that on a public servant salary? And I'll give you one other that's even worse. Dianne Feinstein, same salary, yes, spanning over two decades, but nonetheless, her value is over $1 billion. Where's that money coming from?
Yeah, Obama and Clinton's are the same way. Well, here's the thing is, even Max, because I live out in this area, Maxine Waters doesn't even live in her own district.
Am I surprised? No, I'm not surprised. See, to me, the liberal left, not only are they the poster child for mental illness, but they don't have any respect for the rule of law. It's the law is whatever they say it is in the moment that they say it.
Well, that's right. You can see it in the Supreme Court picks. They want those people to be pliable. They want them to bend to public opinion and versus the rule of law. And so, you know, that's how they govern their lives is that, look what they're doing to the people. They can't get Trump to change, so now they're harassing all of his people to try to you know, not, I don't even use the word shame them. They want to scare them.
Well, I think it's going to get worse. It's not serve you today. It's put something dangerous in your food tomorrow. It's outright violence. And allow me to bring one political thing into this discussion. You know, 4 years ago, and this came from Border Patrol agents, a DEA agent that contacted me, who were outraged. They were ordered to release MS-13 into this country. They gather them up in groups of 8 to 12, and off they go. And, in fact, they just sentenced a woman from MS-13, 20 years old, convicted of murders and all this in Florida. She got 95 years. Well, that's the kind of people that we're admitting to this country. And you know what MS-13 does in Mexico? They're the hired hitmen that kill the chief of police, the city council member, the mayors, who don't do the cartel's bidding. And we let these people into our country. And so when we talk about harassing, you know, elected officials for their positions, particularly in the Trump administration, Bob, I think it's going to get a whole lot worse than that.
Yeah, I mean, in Mexico, you had 300 politicians that were killed in the last election cycle.
Yeah, and, you know, crickets chirping with the mainstream media, because then you have to ask who's doing it. And when you go, MS-13. Then people, didn't we let those guys in here? So, yeah, you're exactly right. So we're entering a period of extreme volatility. So back to the main reason why I asked you to come on. When we take a look at economic forces in America today, okay, what should people be looking at and taking stock of ahead of everything else? Because there's a lot of noise out there, Bob. Help us separate the important noise from the background noise.
Okay, so the first thing that you need to note is that you always look to gold, and Sorry for the background noise.
I think that guy's looking for gold too.
and that I know the police actually were putting signs out there. I have this long stretch of road down the canyon below me, and guys like to rip up it. But you always look at gold first and see how gold is reacting to everything. Because what's going to happen, Dave, is that you're going to get into a period of lack of trust again, like we had in 2008, and with counterparty risks. And the only place that's really a safe haven is gold. And now also, I always do gold plus cryptocurrency, because you want something that doesn't require trust. Okay, those are what's called trustless assets. You know, gold is gold. I mean, it doesn't take more than 5 seconds for people to understand that. And the same with cryptocurrencies, at least the main ones, they're called trustless, because if I send you a coin over, you get the coin. I don't have to get permission. I own it, or I couldn't send it. That's what they mean by trustless exchange. And then plus it can't be confiscated. And so you're starting to watch those things, number one. And then number two is you watch the cost of things against the fiat currency that you're in. And this year, and one of the first things that go up were, see, the big money can't all rush into gold, Dave. So they have to rush into the second best thing, and that's oil. And they have been buying oil like it's going out of stock. And you know what? And oil is plentiful. There's more oil than we know what to do with, Dave. But the big money moves into oil because it gets them out of the stock market or gets them out of the bond market. That's their go-to. And they're going to go to that until they do, just like it happened in 2008. They pushed the price of oil so high that then it actually caused the economy to start rolling over into recession. And we're at that point now. I mean, look at oil today. It's $73, $74. You know, it was $50, you know, at the beginning of the year. It's 50% move higher. And it doesn't take more than oil costs more than 4% of GDP before it takes people off the off the rails and then put it in a recession. And we're at that point now. I mean, you know, out here, you know, gasoline in California is over $4 in some places again. People can't get to work, Dave. And that's what starts causing this cascade effect. And you know what they did with health insurance. So those are the things that I look at first. And when we started seeing oil move, immediately the 2008 headline came up, and I'm saying they're going to push this thing. And then the other thing too, and we talked about this offline, is that now you have the central banks starting to try to push interest rates up. So you have oil going up, you have interest rates going up. This is the same thing that happened in 2008. At the same time, they're trying to tell people not to worry, and they're pushing the stock market up. And so everybody's sitting there going, I don't understand the problem. But you remember 2008 well. And over the span of 6 weeks, we fell 40%, and people were wiped out. And now people are 10 years older, and these people can't recover, Dave. Most of these people have all the assets are 55 to 70 years old. And if they wipe them out this time, it's dead city. So I've been, you know, how long you and I've been talking, I've just been pounding on the table to tell people you got to take money off the table, money off the table, money off the table. And look, we've gone nowhere this year in the stock market. We're not even back to the February highs. And so when people look at it and say, well, look at the market, it's gone up 5% in the last 6 days. Well, they forget 6 weeks ago it fell 10%, you know, in 6 weeks. It's been churning. And when that money's gone, Dave, it's really hard to get it back. And so that's why I've been telling people, start getting your the safest place to put your money if you have to keep it in the stock market is buy silver and gold miners. If you can get money out of the stock market, put some into cryptocurrencies. And believe it or not, at least short term, the treasury bonds are going to fall. The yields are going to fall again too. So there'll be an opportunity for one last shot for people to refi their mortgages before that whole thing goes off the rails too. And that's like 2 years down the line.
Yeah, you know, this is, and by the way, let me mention, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Bob Kudla of Trade Genius Academy, and I asked him to come on the air tonight to discuss economic forces that could negatively impact us and we'll get to some solutions here in a little while. But Bob, one of the things that greatly concerns me is the market volatility, and people seem to be living like it's 1929. Gee, the market's been up and up and up, and they're not seeing the danger signs. What danger signs should they be seeing in the market right now that should make them seek alternatives for investment in terms of safer investments in the market or investments outside the market?
Well, when you start seeing oil and gold move up with the stock market, that should be your first clue that the big money is starting to get out of the stock market. That's number one. And number two is when you start seeing interest rates going up like we did, which caused the February issues, is that means there's stress in the marketplace. And all the other things are kind of, and the other thing too, what people don't realize is the Japanese yen has a huge influence on our stock market. And what they do is they sell that currency, Dave, just like we talked about with the counterfeiting. That's why it's so insidious what they're doing with the stock market, is that they'll go ahead and they'll sell Japanese yen currency, which basically they're creating it out of thin air, and then they take that fiat value and they go ahead and they pump the stock market up with that.
Mm-hmm.
So when it gets to the point where the Japanese can't tolerate a weak currency anymore because they have to buy oil and food and raw materials for their industries, is that when that yen starts to turn higher, that's another warning flag. So we're already getting them all over the place. You have interest rates starting to get intolerable, oil prices getting intolerable, gold starting to move, the miners starting to move, and you have the Japanese yen that has been pushed down since April, and it gets to the point where those folks can't afford to import anything. But you're seeing stress around the world too. You know, Venezuela is obvious. You've seen that. Argentina's had a crisis this year. Brazil, they almost shut the country down because the truckers are saying we're not getting paid enough. Today in Turkey, the Turkish president hired his son-in-law to run the central bank of Turkey. Okay, that's going to end well.
Jeez.
You know, and then you look no further what's happening in Europe. I mean, they're basically destroying the country through this experiment they're doing with immigration, and I think we're on a precipice. And then you got the short rates are going up. So there's a thing called a yield curve, Dave. It takes the shortest duration of a bond and the longest one, and the closer those come to in price, the chance of a recession rises, and it's almost flat, and that's a warning bell for people.
That is, how do I encapsulate what you just said? Because you just told me about three different ways that we're going to see an economic collapse at some point in time. Am I overstating this?
Well, I don't know if, you know, what I tell people is it's going to be more like the Great Reset. I think the battle right now is that economically, Trump's doing a really savvy thing. He's doing the only thing we can do, Dave. He's killing trade to protect the dollar and basically protect the jobs in this country. And he knows politically that is probably the most palatable thing he can do to keep the economic GDP, you know, and employment and tax revenues running. But it has a price, and that price is inflation and stock market collapse. And so that's what's going to happen first. And then from there, we'll see what the knock-on effect is in terms of the economics. But you have to realize, too, I mean, people can't afford to do anything but basic living anymore. And so, you know, it's just going to be a malaise, Dave, is why I look at it. We're going to reset. Trade has collapsed. I wouldn't want to be Chinese right now, and I wouldn't want to be German, or I don't want to be Japanese. Those countries are going to absolutely implode, okay? Because they're mercantilist countries that live on exporting. Trump's been very clear; he's killing it, and he's already dropped it $70 billion. So he's already about 15% of the way of where he wants to be, and but that means the stock market's going to have to suffer because these companies that are going to be importing at higher prices aren't going to be able to pass those costs on to us because we're not getting paid more in wages.
Well, let me ask you to evaluate a comparison. When I look at China today, I see Japan in the late 1920s. And I see Japan is a country that greatly needs to expand its industrial base for a lot of different reasons. And I'm wondering how aggressive they're going to be with their neighbors. And they already have been. They've been aggressive with India, with Vietnam, the South China Sea, territorial shipping rights. Is there any parallel that you see between Japan of 1929 and China today?
No, you nailed it. That was going to be my example. In fact, China has also the attributes of America in 1929 as well. You know, trade surplus and budget surplus. And so they're going to suffer greatly. And the thing about it is China can't feed their people and they can't provide enough energy for their people without imports. So if their export market collapses, that country's in a world of hurt.
Well, I know that China is hoarding gold, and they're hoarding gold a lot. How is this going to affect what we're talking about?
Well, it's gonna raise the price of gold. That's why I've always been pounding the table. But the thing is, China won't give up their gold, so I'm not sure what mechanism they're going to use for people to use it, if you will. So that remains to be seen. But absolutely, I think the gold and silver is going to rapidly get out of the hands of the bankers, and you're going to see rapid price increases in gold and silver. And that's one thing that's been our theme. It's one of the reasons why I started Trade Genius when I did, 2.5 years ago. And before that, I was a silver trader and had a private group of traders with me. Is that that's the future. You want to own tangible assets, Dave. If I can boil down this whole conversation, it's you got to start owning tangible assets. If you have to own property, make sure it's income producing. If you have your own home, make sure that you're going to be able to carry the debt. If you have you're in stocks, move to things that people absolutely need, not want. I.e., you don't need Google, you don't need Facebook, you don't need Twitter, you don't need Netflix. You know, those are the things that you want to have. But the things that you have to have are food and oil and gold and silver, and those things are all going to rise in value. And those are all the things that have been suppressed by the bankers to create this illusion that we have, and that they're slowly losing that grip, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this then. I took an investment class one time many, 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 many years ago when I knew far less than I do today, and I don't claim to know a lot, but I knew a lot less then. And one of the things I took away from what I was taught were the people in the Depression, the Great Depression here in America, spanning the 1930s, the people that continued to make money were the people that sold the everyday products, the toilet paper, the toothpaste, if you will, the kitchen utensils. Procter & Gamble did pretty well. Johnson & Johnson did pretty well. Do you think that'll apply to what could be coming our way as well?
Yeah, and actually, and the sector that did the very best in the Great Depression were the precious metal mining companies. And so, yeah, so consumer staples and miners, absolutely. And believe it or not, the bond market will do very well as well, Dave, because people would rather get, you know, 1% or 0.5% on their money versus losing 30 or 40% in the stock market. So you'll see money move back into bonds as well. Those are three areas for sure. And then people are going to opt out of the banking system, you know, and they're going to exchange, you know, barter through cryptocurrencies. There's no question in my mind. You see it already in the countries that are already having problems. The people are using Bitcoin and Litecoin and such to do their bartering transactions already.
That has my attention because it eliminates government interference and third-party control, like through the central bankers, like the Federal Reserve. I mean, am I right in that, that they're going to have a heck of a time containing the use of cryptocurrency? And that people will say, hey, you know, like in the Revolutionary War, there used to be a saying when the Continental Congress just did nothing but print money with nothing behind it and it greatly inflated. And people said, I don't want your Continental. It's not worth a Continental. And that used to be the saying. Give me your gold. Give me something to trade and barter with. Is that where the dollar is headed, in your opinion?
Yeah, the dollar will be the last to fall, Dave. But yeah, that's exactly all fiat currencies collapse under the weight of counterfeiting. And the thing about the cryptocurrencies, at least the ones that you are that are mainstream, have they have limited amounts that are created. And so it's like I say, it doesn't require trust. If I have a Bitcoin and Bitcoin's worth $6,000 and I want to buy $6,000 worth of something, is that I get the good and I send you the coin. You know, it doesn't go through a bank. It doesn't need anybody's permission.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's not anonymous, but it's pseudonymous. That means you knew something happened, you just don't know who did it. And that's a great advantage for people, too. And that's now evolving to what they call decentralized exchanges, because, you know, China shut down all the exchanges in China. Well, now the next level is called, these are called decentralized exchanges, where your coins aren't sitting on one exchange where it can get confiscated by a government agency. They may confiscate a location, but it's sitting somewhere else. And so, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I tell people when they listen to me, they say, what's your theme, Bob? It's like, look, we're migrating from a banking environment to a non-banking environment. We're migrating from a stock market of financialization to a stock market of commodities. And like you said, we're going to get down to the basics again, and that's the future. And you know, and once Dave, once these in 2018, five stocks have created the entire growth of the stock market. Five stocks. One third of the whole growth is from one stock, Amazon.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that.
Amazon's a grocer. You know, so once recession bites and people aren't buying anything, I mean, you have a company there that's you know, those five companies are worth almost $2 trillion in value. That's like 18% of our 11% of our GDP of our country. You know, and just five companies. And what do they produce? You know, you have somebody that does movies, right? You have two social media companies.
Well, let's name them. Let's get the names out there.
All right. So you have Facebook. Facebook's an ad agency, right?
Yeah.
Twitter's an ad agency. Google's an ad agency that masquerades as a search engine. All right. You got Apple, is a phone company, and you have Netflix, which is a digital blockbuster. Those companies, and Amazon, which I basically call the world's largest flea market, and those companies are 11% of the entire gross domestic product of our nation. And
how much of the stock? How much of the stock market?
I get that backwards. They're 11% of the stock market.
Okay, that's
and.
Cool.
Yeah, sorry, and GDP on the brain, and they, what happens is that because they're so big, and the way it works with these passive investments, is that when Swiss National Bank comes in, they can't pick and choose what company they like. They just buy the market. When they buy the market, they buy these five or six companies every time, and so these companies are just getting jacked and jacked and jacked up, and now you have retail is in there selling and buying what they call the derivatives on this stuff. So it's basically, it's a gasoline with a rag in it waiting for a match. And when people start selling this, it's going to go down like it went up.
When you say the derivatives, can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, the derivatives is like, it's when you do a leverage, like with calls and puts. Like when you, you can buy an option on it. So you can take a little bit of money and control a bigger piece of something with an option. And so that's usually the purview of what they call smart money. And smart money means money that's informed. And now retail, which is called dumb money, which is uninformed money, has been in the markets really aggressively chasing these stock market buy the dips. And today, Twitter fell 10% today just out of the blue. You know, it probably wiped a few people out, Dave. And just think when all five of them start to fall like that, it's a cascade. And because of all the leverage that's associated with the stock market right now.
Well, here's my concern as an American consumer. Okay, this is strictly Dave Hodges' personal opinion here. But I look at these companies, and this is my grave concern. In World War II, we won and we survived because we had hard industry we could convert to weapons industries, and we outproduced our enemies. And that's the major reason why we won World War II. And then you take a look now at what these bozos represent. Amazon, very little of value. They don't manufacture anything. Like you said, it's a swap meet. Facebook, no, they want your data so they can sell marketing. And then you've got Twitter, they're no different. Apple is the only real product that I see here. Am I missing something, Bob? Because I'm worried that the market's made up of BS, and there's only one company here that has hard assets that's in the market in terms of representing growth, and that's Apple.
No, I totally agree with you. These companies have no book value other than probably the real estate they own, because the intellectual value of it is only what people prescribe to it. You know, there's nothing, there's no there if people move off of what these guys like to do. These companies disappear. Look at 2000. They're saying the same thing about Cisco, and Cisco was a $300 billion company back in 2000. They said, oh, this could be the first $1 trillion company. Well, Cisco is a shell of its former self because people moved off of that technology, and that's the big risk you have with those kind of companies. Yeah, there's no U.S. Steel. Look at they kicked GE off the Dow, Dave.
Yeah.
That should just tell you all you need to know, you know.
Wow.
And GE got in trouble because they left their roots and they became a finance company, you know. So, but that's where Trump, I think, has done a really good thing for the country. He understands it, and he's been consistent for his entire adult life on this. You listen to interviews from him on Dave Letterman in the 80s and in the 90s when he started promoting his book about, you know, the Donald Trump art of the deal thing. He, you know, you just swap China for Japan, and he's been railing on the stupidity of our politicians and bad trade deals that whole time. And he intuitively understands that if you lose your manufacturing base, you also lose the ability to manufacture the tools. And once you do that, you basically become a colonial subject to those who make it, and that's Japan, China, and Germany, and you know, for a while there, Japan controlled all the machine tools, and Germany all the equipment, you know, and then China just flooded the markets with their manufacturing prowess, and so it got to a point where, you know, people weren't joking about being a McDonald's country.
Bob, are you with us? Hello, Bob? We'll try it again one more time. Ask for your patience, ladies and gentlemen. Bob, are you with us?
No, Dave, I'm here. Can you hear me?
All right, good. Yeah, we had a dropout for about 10 seconds. I'll tell you, you were getting to the good point here about you basically had the Axis powers claiming victory along with the communists of China. And you said that some comparison with McDonald's, if you want to finish that thought.
Yeah, I mean, you just become basically a colonial nation where all you're doing is consuming and cheap products, you know. And I think the American people have had enough. And that's where I think Trump has done a great job in terms of trying to build our manufacturing knowledge back up again and get basically –
push that expertise back into the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. The free trade agreements represent that move, because it's what he's doing with fair trade, not free trade, has basically restored some manufacturing as well as some tax breaks. Well, Bob, now this is the hard part. People are scratching their heads and go, holy crap, Batman, what are we going to do? And this is one of the reasons why I wanted you on, because I'm real familiar with your operation. I know what you do at Trade Genius. I know how many people you've had. I know about the 300% win rates that you saw in some products in June. Talk to the audience a little bit about, is there hope, and what can people do in the face of these overwhelming challenges?
Yeah, so the first thing, there's always a bull market somewhere. So, and that's what we look for. We just look for the opportunities. And just the website, just to let you know too, Dave, because we finally were able to expand everything. And so the site that people can go to now is tradelikeagenius.com. And that's where we integrated our trading service and our academy into one place there now. So it's called tradelikeagenius.com. And what we do is we educate, and we have a community, and we have software, and we have trading signals. Those are the four things that we do, and it's all under one roof, and we trade just about everything. So we have stocks and ETFs. I'm sure people are familiar with that. Those are the, you know, groups and sectors and things of that nature. We trade options, and we trade binary options, which are a great way for people to learn how to trade and be able to take a small account and move it into becoming a larger account. And then we also trade the cryptocurrencies, and we've been doing very well this year. Our stock record is 70% win rate, and we average about a 35% or 40% growth in the portfolio each and every year. So we're not chasing penny stocks, you know. We're chasing, you know, good, well named companies, and we like to buy the things I talk about here. We're into oil stocks. We're into commodities for precious metals. We trade agricultural stocks and things of that nature. And then the binary options, the one I talked about in the month of June, we helped basically take people's portfolio, and we lifted it up nearly 700% for the month of June. And because we know how to trade the futures market, so we show people how they can trade options and make money nearly every day trading options. And we have software tools and signals that we push right out to people. So it really helps people. And in fact, the cryptocurrencies, people are saying, oh, the cryptos are dead. And we just laugh, and we're like, oh, contraire. And we just exited a trade this week on Digibyte, and we had a 46% run on it. We've had two 100% runs on Bitcoin this year. So we just help people make money nearly every day in the market, and we have proven tools and algorithms and approaches. Plus, we're very experienced. We've been trading for a long time, and we're actively involved. I mean, I've been up since 3:30 this morning, my time, trading. And so I'll be at it again tomorrow for the opening of the market. I'm in the chat rooms. My partner Phil, who trades on the crypto side, he's in the chat rooms all day as well, and we're very heavily engaged. And we want people to succeed. Trading is one of those things where I can win and you can win. It's one of the win-win things where we can all help each other and not take anything from each other.
Yeah, and unfortunately, with some brokers, that's not the case. They get their money up front, and to heck with how the stock does. Yeah, I hear you, and I think that's really admirable. You know, I've always looked at your company as something that takes a three-step approach. And what I mean by that is, first you educate people, then you give them guidance as they're investing. They get to draw upon some of the more experienced people. And then you've got the crypto software, the binary option software, which has a win rate that's fantastic, you know, once they're more experienced. And it's kind of like just this graduated three-tier system that people can survive in as you find the good markets. Now, here's the $64 million question. How do you find these good markets, Bob, when things are so tough?
Well, the thing is, let's forget about the scenarios for a second. Is when you trade, there's only really two things that matter, Dave. It's volume and price. And so you create these calculations that are basically looking for selling pressure and buying pressure. So what we look for is sectors that have been pushed down, and then we start looking for the money to start flowing into it. The big money can't sneak into anything. So we always call ourselves, we're kind of like seagulls, you know, the whales and the big fish are out there pushing the bait fish up to the surface, and we just watch it happen. And as soon as we get enough momentum in a certain sector, then we join that sector and we buy along with them, and we take what we call the middle 60% of the move, and then we move on to the next sector that's moving. And there's always a sector that's moving, Dave. So we call it buying pressure and selling pressure. We created algorithms to help us understand when it's time to get in and when it's time to get out, and we move on. Now, from a macro standpoint, because I've been doing this my whole adult life, not trading, but looking at macro, I was a strategic planner. I did M&A work for many years, is that you have to understand the environment that you're in. And yeah. So,
and I'm not sure we're going to have time to go down that road, because we're just about out of time. And I'm going to have you back on to talk about this because listen, the three-step approach you take is absolutely fantastic. And I know my listening audience is going to want to know more. So if they go to the website tradelikeagenius.com, Bob, can they talk to someone first before they invest?
Oh, absolutely. And just so you know too, you're not giving your money to me. You're joining us in your either getting a subscription or getting software or getting training. So, yeah, absolutely. You just go to tradelikeagenius.com. We have specials running right now to the 15th, Dave. We've already put the prices in there. They're fantastic prices. We bundle services together where people can get the software and the signals together. And there's different price levels for people. They can buy monthly, they can buy annually, and there's some incredible deals out there. So you go there and you want to talk to somebody, you can hit chat, you can get somebody, you can talk to somebody and learn everything about us.
Yeah, I've seen you get the 7-day free trials and all that. That's really good stuff. Well, Bob, my friend, we are out of time, and I want to thank you for joining us. We are going to do this again. This has really been informative, and I just want to leave that website out there again for everyone to go to, tradelikeagenius.com. Hey, don't trust the banking system, folks. Tradelikeagenius.com. Bob Kudla, thanks for joining us.